Thank you. Well, good morning, and just to say thank you very much for having me here. It's great. It's really wonderful. I'll jump straight into what I'm going to talk about. My research is based in Croatia, which is just for the geography, the country above, so that's Croatia, above is Slovenia, to the right is Bosnia-Herzegovina, and just to the left is Italy, so just the geography quickly. And the research started off with humans, just humans, because I was struck, what actually, and a lot of people who start doing research into breastfeeding females, academics, is when they start breastfeeding themselves and it becomes, oh my goodness, what is this? So that was a starting position, because what I noticed was a lot of human women were shocked and actually anxious because they'd been told that breastfeeding is something totally natural. And then they'd actually had lots of difficulties establishing breastfeeding. And women told me that they hadn't actually spoken about it. Some women who'd had an infant 30 years ago, that they'd actually doubted their ability as a mother because they felt that if they couldn't do this very natural thing, how was it then that they were going to be a good mother? But I already had an interest in non-humans, so then constantly when you're talking about human breast milk, there's a comparison with other milks. So what is the best milk? This hierarchy constantly appears about what's the best milk, what's the best substitute milk for humans. So then my research branched out into others, into goats and cows and sheep and donkeys. The research I did on the islands, one of the islands, I'll just try to get the mouse to do it here, the island of Pag, which has a very strong cheese-producing tradition. Rijeka here and Istria, the Istrian peninsula, which is also for donkey milk now, increasing interest in donkey milk there. The research itself was very broad, which was good and also dangerous in the sense that you're a huge number of informants, so from cows, sheep, donkeys, to midwives, pediatricians, colleagues from the Faculty of Agriculture, microbiologists, all sorts of people involved. So you feel yourself very spread very thinly. You always feel you've not got the detail for each area, which can be very sort of, it makes you feel very sort of unsatisfied. Danger as well is that I'm living very close to all these areas, so wherever I'm having a question, then I'm jumping off to a farm to go and ask someone, which is kind of dangerous because then the research itself actually never stops. So that's one problem. So that's just a very background, if you like, into my what I'm doing. Today, I'm going to, because there's so much that can be said, what I'm going to do is to try and give you, from each milk producer species, I'm going to try and give you some points of interest, which I found very interesting. Now, they are points of difference, so I am highlighting the difference here. One of my interests was to add humans into the mix, because very often research on milk is either human milk or non-human milk, and I wanted to bring them together. And I think that starts up a conversation, which is what I want to then give you an example of that conversation. There's all sorts of areas. They start to talk to each other, the different milks, at least the material. So that's something I want to show you. So first of all, what I want to do is to show you some of what I saw with the sort of main nuances of each form of milk that I looked at. So I'm sorry, it's skimming through. I'm going to talk about cows for a minute. So it is, as I say, broad rather than deep. With cows in Croatia, I visited two farms. There were farms that were registered and legally working. So the cows are registered, the milk is controlled by the microbiologists, and everything is monitored. And then there are farms where everything is, I don't like to use the word illegal because it's too harsh, but it is. They're not registered at all. So the cows, even the cows, aren't registered. So nothing is registered. So everything is happening just on its own without anyone monitoring it. And then you've got some in-between farms where some of the cows are registered and some aren't. So when the vets or inspectors come, then the farmers will go and hide the cows somewhere in the pasture far away, hoping the vet doesn't come to see them. So you've got different types of farms. The milk in all the farms I visited was being used for cheese making and also for consumption, direct consumption. The legal farms were selling the milk to the dairy processing plants. The illegal farms weren't, because they weren't allowed to, because the milk wasn't being monitored. And that was something that was really struck. The dairy farms for cows were the largest farms I visited. They were the most, if you like, commercial farms. So you constantly, and the farmers were talking about it, and the people who were working on the farm were talking about this control, checking, controlling, monitoring, self-reporting onto the Ministry of Agriculture website. You have to write down exactly how many litres of milk you've produced. Problems with the internet, because you can't get the internet signal, but you've got to write down that day. Veterinarians, I'm afraid veterinarians for most of the farmers I spoke to were just, you just didn't want them on your farm. They were a cause of extreme anxiety, because they tended to come and do an inspection. If they found somebody wasn't right, one of the cows was ill, then they would stop them from producing milk. So they said, they also said, for example, with artificial insemination, that they were quite sure the vets were cheating them, because the cows never got pregnant the first time, and this was so they could get more money. So they saw vets as somebody who came to take money from them. But that was the sense you got on the cow dairy farm, that it was a business, that it was an economic investment, and everyone on the farm had to contribute. So if you weren't contributing to what the farmer said was a very delicate economic ecosystem, if you weren't contributing, then you were culled. You weren't part of the farm anymore. So this idea that bulls who ate too much, they would get culled. If the cows were getting recurring mastitis, they would get culled. So it was very much an impression I got when I was looking at the cow dairy farms, was this delicate ecosystem, economic ecosystem, which everyone had to contribute to, and if you didn't, then you weren't part of the farm. So that's cows in the terms of milk production. Sheep. Synonym for sheep milk was cheese. So we have sheep cheese traditions in Croatia. They have strong traditions. And I looked at cheese on two areas, on the island of Pag and on Grobnik, the Grobnik plain, which is just beyond Rijeka. On the island of Pag, the cheese or the milk that's made, produced by the sheep, is mainly sold to the cheese factories. So there's a very organised cheese factory tradition on Pag. On Grobnik, not so much. Grobnik is a much economically poorer area. So farmers are making their own cheese. The sheep aren't registered as well, and they're just producing it in their homes and then selling it on the doorstep. Pag is different. Pag, the farmers have other things. It's not just farming, so they do other things during the day. One thing that was very notable with sheep milk was the way of the land ownership. On Pag, the land is inherited, and the flock is inherited by the farmers, so they inherit from their parents and grandparents, and they also inherited the land. The land was divided up in 1925 according to how many household members you had. The land got divided up, and that means that the farmers can go and do other things during the day. They go, they maybe have some tourism, or they do something else, wine vineyards, and then in the morning and the afternoon they come to milk the sheep. On Grobnik, not. On Grobnik, they have just a small area around their house, which very much changes the relation they have with the sheep, because the sheep are kept inside all winter in the barn, and then in the summer, transhumanism still, they go up to the mountains with their sheep, and they actually live with the sheep. So they're living there, up there with the sheep. They have to, because there's predators, bears and wolves will come and eat the sheep, so they actually go and live up there. One farmer, which I thought was wonderful, said that they were like bees. He just follows them like bees, his bee sheep, he called them. But that also has a very big influence on the way the cheese-producing traditions are going on, because the younger generations don't want to go and live up on the mountains for all the whole summer, when they say, well, we could go and sail away and go and live on a boat and earn much more money than doing this. So on Pag, no. Pag just now very proudly got a gold award, or first prize, at the Froom Global Cheese Awards, Pag cheese. So that's a very different way of things. Right, we're moving swiftly on to donkeys. Donkey milk stands out with all the other milks, apart from humans, because the milk, the foals are kept alive. So the milk is borrowed. Or the farmers said, which was interesting to me, because we didn't talk about cow milk or sheep milk in those terms, the milk is stolen or taken from the foals. The Jenny, they say, won't produce milk if she doesn't see her foal. So what they'll do is maybe put a cloth around her udders overnight, and then in the morning, so the foal can't get to it, and then in the morning they'll milk her and then take her back to the foal. What that means is that there's a very small amount of milk produced, so there's only a little amount of milk is taken. And that means that the farmers have to balance the milk they take with the foal's needs. If they take too much, the foal won't thrive. And the knock-on effect of that is the cost of the milk, which is between, I've translated it into pounds, between 30 to 80 pounds a litre. So that's the actual cost of the milk. And a knock-on effect of that is that people don't froth it onto their cornflakes or something. They drink it as a tonic every day. They have a 10-day dose often at the beginning of the winter or at autumn time to boost the immune system, and then at the springtime also to boost the immune system. So that's something that is a very different way of drinking the milk. And we can see that that is because of the quantity of milk that's visible being taken. But what's interesting there is that... the foals are kept alive, which in no other farms I saw, so apart from humans. So that was different. That's a bit confusing. Goats, again, we're moving swiftly on. I'm sorry to be bombarding you, but I just want you to get that comparison. Goats are seen in Croatia, or called in Croatia, the cows of the poor. The goats, because they could eat everything in front of them, didn't require such a huge amount of food. And often, for example, on Grobnik Plain, they would have a cow, people would have cows, but that was to be sold, not for family consumption, and the family would consume the goat's milk. Goats were banned in Croatia from 1954. This was actually during Yugoslavia, when Croatia was part of Yugoslavia. It wasn't a Yugoslavian thing. In the Austro-Hungarian Empire, they were also banned, and in other periods, they were banned. In the Mediterranean, they know to be banned because of their foraging ability to eat everything in sight. After the Second World War, the forestry industry were trying to rebuild. Everything was destroyed. They were trying to replant saplings, and people's goats were going and eating all the saplings. So this has decimated, in a way, the goat sort of keeping tradition. People did keep goats. Their relation with goats is very different because this was for the family consumption, not to be sold. I spoke to one lady who, she'd been born in a concentration camp. They'd returned back to Croatia, and their goat was the only source of food that they had for the family. So the goat ban was devastating for them. In the end, the inspectors would know that this family was in a very bad situation, so they wouldn't take their goat from them. So they were sort of looking, how do you say, between the fingers. So this was interesting. Goats have a different, again, there's something different going on with goats. One thing, and we spoke about this last night, which I kept hearing, and I can't get to the bottom, but we were talking about this, is that people say with great authority, all sorts of people, goat's milk is terribly healthy, not just for allergies, but also because goats don't get cancer. So a lot of people are drinking goat's milk because they think that it's because of goats not getting cancer. So that was interesting. Also a sort of health food as well. So that's goats. And now moving on to humans. What stands out instantly when you start to put humans on the same level as non-humans, and I mean like analytically to keep everyone on the same level, not to make any hierarchy about which is the best milk or anything, is the breastfeeding relation is seen as extremely important. And in fact, sometimes people say, oh, it's more important than the actual milk itself. With non-humans, that relation is obviously not there, apart from with the donkeys. So that's interesting. That straight away you get sort of hit by that. It's seen as a very important, that intimate relation. A lot of women say they feel extremely awkward about showing their milk to others, and now I would just like Emma there. This is just wonderful because Emma is the exception to the rule, so we've got her best milk from last night. So delighted that we've got some milk here with us. So anyway, thank you.
Here's through the
night. Yeah, so... Big applause. So women feel very awkward about that. The letdown reflex, I don't know, anyone breastfeeding's had that experience, terrible experience where suddenly in a public place the milk starts to flow when you didn't want it. So there's a sign of or a sense of discomfort. We can't say that milk sharing doesn't exist. It does exist. We've got milk banks. I've underlined it because in Croatia at the moment we haven't got one, but it's coming in the next few months. Bodybuilders use milk to build up their muscles. Medical conditions, some people think that it will help them to, often with a disease, with a progressive disease like multiple sclerosis, that if they drink human milk it might help them slow down. So there's informal milk sharing like that. Obviously since the introduction of powdered milk, of infant formula, things have greatly changed. There's a huge history, and I haven't gone into that, but there's a huge history of wet nursing and milk sharing, which now longer is in effect now. It's seen as very dangerous to be sharing milk just willy-nilly. You really need to know what that milk is. It's not just for medical reasons that milk is closely monitored, human milkship. We have a milk kinship in Islam. In the Quran, it's written that two people drinking milk from the same woman are considered as milk siblings. So you need to keep an eye on. And when I spoke to the Effendi in the mosque in Rijeka, he said, yes, they have a notebook where they keep who's drunk milk from the same person, if anyone has. So they know later on that they're not actually allowed to marry. And this El Kufashnunga written a very interesting article about that problem in milk sharing in the milk bank, because obviously you don't know whose milk it is. So that makes some problems. So those are the milks I looked at. And now what I want to very quickly show you is the comparison, the conversation that I think you can get when you put everyone on the same level and you put humans in there. That was my idea, was to put humans in with the non-humans and see how they talk to each other. I'm going to give a very sort of obvious example, but it's one that really does strike you straight away, is this depersonalization of milk. One concept or term I kept hearing all the way through my fieldwork was this idea of protecting the human food chain. We've got to keep the human food chain safe. We mustn't let bad things get into it. And in cow's milk, and I've used cow's milk here as an example because it is, as I said, the most sort of commercial I saw, is that there's an awful lot of people involved in its production. When you start to follow it, and I did, I followed it along and saw that we had lots of other people involved, right up to the supermarket employees. They can alter the constitution of the milk. If the milk's kept out of the fridge, then it goes off. So all these people are involved in that product. And what happens is the cow, she is just disappeared. Now, we've seen this with meat packaging and this discussion, but the cow actually disappears. Even the farmer disappears. It becomes a brand's milk. And just very quickly, you can see here, I just took, this is actually a comparison of the different milks in Croatia. There's only two pictures with cows on. The rest are, there's some humans, but that's it. So the cow has completely gone. When we quickly go back to the humans, can see that the mother and child, the breastfeeding relation is very intimate. It's extremely intimate relation. That's what's foregrounded the whole time. But actually, when you start to think of, okay, who's disappearing in this story, there are lots of people who are disappearing. The midwives, the maternity nurses, the mothers-in-law, the mothers, all these people are actually influencing that relation. But those people tend to be held back. So then you get this sort of holding up of this relation as being intimate, where no one else is involved, which then helps with that, or doesn't help with that idea of milk production, breastfeeding being such a natural thing. Actually, there's lots of people helping to produce that milk, it's just they're not in the picture. So what we can see is how constructed, Wiley talks about the milk imaginations of milk, there's all sorts of different types. Mastitis is another area, and I'm going to stop now, but mastitis is another area where we can see a huge contrast in treatment between economic and emotional investment in milk production, in the sense that the cow production is economic and in humans it's an emotional investment. And there's transgression if you are a farmer who's investing too much emotion in your cows. I spoke with farmers who said this. Right, so just to then wrap up, I'm sorry, we're whizzing through, is we can compare lots of other areas, gender, a huge issue for farmers, where are the males going, what to do with the males, character, is she a good milker, we don't talk about humans in that sense, breed, with humans it's absolutely taboo subject that you even start to think about ethnicity or anything, and first and finally life trajectory in the sense that with the farm animals, that's their life, as opposed to humans, which is just a part of that infant-child relation. So I'll stop, sorry if I went on.